I want to finish what we started last week as a completion of this Mishnah and preparation for Shavuos, obviously. Now, let me just recap quickly where we're holding. We asked two questions. One is, there's an argument between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim whether the Torah was given on the sixth day of Sivan or the seventh day of Sivan. For all practical purposes, we hold the Torah was given on the seventh day of Sivan. Yet Shavuos always falls on the sixth day of Sivan. So the Torah was not given on that date. So why did the rabbis institute to say Zman Matan Torah Seinu on Shavuos? The fact that we celebrate Shavuos, the Torah doesn't say, has anything to do with giving of the Torah. And according to Rabbi Yossi, it didn't have anything to do. So why do we say Zman Matan Torah Seinu on Shavuos? And the second question was, even if the Torah was given on that day, we never really got it, because the Luchos were broken on the 17th day of Tammuz. We didn't get the Torah until Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur is celebrated, one of the reasons, because that's the day we got the Torah. So why do we celebrate Shavuos altogether as a day of giving of the Torah? Celebrate it for other reasons, but not because the Torah was given then, because the Torah that was given then was abrogated on the 17th of Tammuz. Those are the two questions. We started last week with an understanding that the Torah is a present. It's not a liability. It's not a burden. It's a tremendous opportunity, a merit, and we brought many ideas that support that. And then we left with a question. If that's true, that the Torah is a tremendous benefit, a present, a merit, right, as Rabbi Hananya ben Akasha said, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael, God wanted to purify and thereby merit the Jewish people, and therefore he gave us an abundance of Torah and mitzvahs, then why does Rashi say in the Gemara that the Torah was given as a yoke around our neck? Okay, that doesn't sound like a present, merit, benefit. Sounds like a yoke around your neck. Sounds like a burden. So which is it? In addition, we can make the question similar to another seemingly contradiction. In 2 weeks ago, Sedra, the Torah said that you have to approach Torah with toil and effort, and if you do, you get all the blessings that the Torah promises, and if you don't, you go into Golos. And yet, in Parshas Kisavo, the Torah says the reason you go into Golos is because you didn't keep the Torah besimcha v'tuv levav, with joy and a good heart. It doesn't seem to go together. Either you're supposed to keep the Torah with toil and effort, or you're supposed to keep the Torah with joy and a good heart. So which is it?
All
right. You're on the right path. The answer is that they're not exclusive. I'll give you an example. Imagine if somebody gave you a treasure map that directs you to millions of dollars worth of gems, but the gems are buried 100 feet deep in solid rock somewhere on the top of a mountain in the Andes. So you have this treasure map, and you have to invest money to get to the Andes. When you get there, you find out that there's no way of getting up to the top of the mountain except with a mule by walking. So you climb the mountain for maybe weeks, months, finally get up there, and there's no electrical outlets there on the top of the mountain. You need a pickaxe and a shovel to go through 100 feet of solid rock. It may take you years. But finally, you get to the treasure. The person who gave you the treasure map gave you a liability, a burden, or he gave you an opportunity and a present. Obviously, the second. Did it involve a tremendous amount of investment, hard work? Yes. Was it worth it? Yes. That's total. Torah is not easy. It's not necessarily effortless. It involves a tremendous amount of effort and toil and investment. Is it worth it? Yes. It is a treasure. There's no contradiction between them. Can a person put toil and effort into Torah and be happy about it? Yes, if you realize how valuable it is. Is there any contradiction between what Rashi says, that the Torah is a yoke around our neck? Yes, it is, but the yoke is for our sake. That yoke itself is a present. It's a benefit. Okay. Based on that, that message, even though it seems to be very obvious and simple to understand, in this generation, it's very difficult to get that message across. A few years ago, I saw in the Hamodia newspaper an article. They interviewed the head of the Orange Growers Association in Israel. And in that interview, the head of the Orange Growers Association revealed a secret. He said, "We orange growers have invested millions of dollars in a newly genetically engineered orange that's going to come on the market in the near future. I assume it's already on the market. This is a few years ago." So the interviewer asked a very simple question. What was wrong with the old orange that you needed to invest millions of dollars in creating a new genetically improved orange? He said, "I'll tell you. Today, people want things fast and easy. We have to create an orange that's fast to peel because it has a thin skin and easy to eat because it doesn't have pits. Otherwise, people wouldn't buy oranges. So we have to please our clientele. And this generation wants things fast and easy. And when it comes to oranges, that's not so terrible. But people want that in their life, too. And they want that when it comes to Torah. It works out perfectly for today. Today is Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan. There is a skula to say the tefillah of the Shaloh HaKodesh today. Familiar with that? Shaloh HaKodesh composed the tefillah to daven that your children should be B'nai Torah and B'nos Torah, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And the ideal time to say it is now, before Rosh Chodesh Sivan, is the time of Kabbalah Satorah. It's an auspicious time to say this tefillah. Okay, very nice. I said it today. Okay. However, a few years ago, I saw that my people in my moshav were emailing each other frantically. Don't forget to say the tefillah. Make sure you say the tefillah. They were forwarding the downloading the tefillah for people that didn't have access to it. I sent out a message. Anyone who thinks that saying a tefillah, no matter how great the tefillah is, no matter how important the author was, no matter how auspicious the day, saying a tefillah once a year will guarantee that your children will be B'nai Torah, B'nos Torah, has to have their head examined. It's not so easy. You have to put a lot of effort into that. If you put in the effort and you say this tefillah, it's like the icing on the cake. If you put a lot of effort into making a cake and then you ice it, it enhances the flavor of the cake. That's a skula. A skula is an enhancement to a lot of effort that you put in. But if you don't put in the effort and all you have is a skula, it's like having only icing and no cake. If you're over 3 years old, it's very unappetizing. So we've become, instead of an Am Segula, we've become an Am Shel Segulos. People don't want mitzvahs anymore. They don't want to put any effort in. They want fast and easy. That's it. Right? The next year was even worse. The next year I heard on the radio that a tzedakah organization made the following advertisement. Saying the tefillah of the Shaloh takes time. Who has time? And not only that, a lot of people don't even understand what they're saying. You have to start looking at the translation, whatever. If you send us $18, we'll say the tefillah for you. Now that would surely guarantee your children to be B'nai Torah, B'nos Torah. It's absurd. But that's what people want. They want fast, easy, just send some money, have 20 rabbanim, go to 15 different graves, and daven, and all your problems will be solved. You don't have to do anything. It's absurd. Mamash absurd. I heard once a Gadol quoted. I'm sure he didn't say this. There's no question in my mind. Because anybody who would have said what I'm going to tell you he supposedly said has to be an idiot. And he's not an idiot, this Gadol. So he never said this. It was an advertisement for a organization that dealt with handicapped children. And supposedly they quoted this Gadol saying that he guarantees that if you donate to this institution, you will never have a child who's handicapped. Now, that's really great because God doesn't guarantee that, okay? That's the most absurd thing I ever heard in my life. I'm sure the God didn't say it. That's Shaykh that he said it, right? He's totally but this is what people want. They want fast, easy, send some money, and all your problems will be solved. And that causes a tremendous problem in life because people are looking for fast, easy solutions to all the problems, and if they don't get them, so they get out of the situation. And therefore, people are moving around from one community to another because they're looking for the ideal community where there's no problems. They're going from one job to another because they're looking for the ideal job. And they're going from one marriage to another because they're looking for the ideal marriage. That doesn't mean there isn't a time to change your job, to move to a different community, and to get divorced. But that's the last option, not the first option. Right? First, you try to work out the problem. There's three ways of solving problems. The first is to change the situation, get rid of the problem. Example, you have a boss that's a terror, and you don't enjoy going to work every day. The first thing to do is sit down with the boss or have somebody else and try to change the situation so the problem goes away. You tried that, or it's impossible to try that, but you really want this job. It's worth it. Learn how to live with it. Come to work with earplugs. Avoid the boy. Whatever. Right? Learn how to cope with it. If either of those things are not possible, you can't cope with it. It's oppressive. And you can't change the situation. Then find a new job. But that's not the first line of operation. That's the last line of operation. Same thing goes with marriage. Same thing with everything. But people don't understand that today. They want things fast and easy, problemless, challengeless. And if kids get married, why is there so many divorces today? Because they imagine that marriage is going to be utopia. Okay? And since there's a recorder here, except for my marriage, that doesn't exist, right? There's no such thing as a perfect marriage, right? There's always problems, right? If my wife listens to this thing, you got it. It's impossible. So what do? You work on the problems. You learn to live with it. You change it. If you can't, then we're not Catholics. There's divorce. But people don't want that. They imagine they're going to have a life with no problems. And as soon as a little problem, that's it, finished. So they don't want to put in any effort. There's no effort, toil, investment. It's just either it's easy, whatever. Rav Moshe Feinstein said something that I think needs explanation, what he meant. Because sometimes I think people misunderstand what he meant. He observed that a generation in America was lost to Shabbos, and the parents were people who were moser nefesh for Shabbos. What's the background? People came from Europe in the beginning of the 1900s, thinking they're coming to the golden Medina of America, and there's gold in the streets, and they're going to be rich, just getting off the boat in Ellis Island. They're going to pick up the gold, become rich. The reality was there's no gold in the streets. There were very few jobs to be found. They lived in tenements on the Lower East Side, and very difficult to find a job. And if you found a job, it didn't produce a great income. And the icing on the cake was that if you didn't come in to work on Shabbos, you didn't have a job on Monday. You had to work on Shabbos. And many people succumbed. They couldn't put up with it. They were starving. So they worked on Shabbos. Frum people. They used to have early minyanim on the Lower East Side so people could daven Shabbos morning and go to work. Talk about frum people. But they felt that they had no choice. There were individuals, though, who were moser nefesh for Shabbos, who never worked on Shabbos. Every week they had to look for a new job. It was difficult for them to put food on the table. And Rav Moshe said a lot of these people's children gave up Shabbos, became mechallel Shabbos. So how could it be? Where is it fair that these people, right, their children became mechallel, and they were moser nefesh for Shabbos? He said, you know what the problem was? These people came home Friday night, and they used to moan and groan, and krech, oh, Shabbos is so difficult. It's so hard to go look for a job every week. We can't put food on the table because of Shabbos. And they complained and moaned and groaned. And the children heard this, and they said, you know, Shabbos is a monster. Our parents are crazy that they don't throw this monster off their shoulders. But we're not crazy. And we get up, we're going to throw this monster off our shoulders. What did Ramosha mean? What should these parents have done? Come home Friday night and say, Shabbos is so much fun. Right? We can't think of anything more exhilarating looking for a job every week. And who wants to eat anyway, right? Eating is not so much fun. It's much fun to fast, right? Lose weight. Right? So we just love Shabbos because we can't eat and we have to look for a job every week. What should they have said? It was hard. We expect to say what is fun? I think Ramosha meant the following. The parents should have come home and said the following. You know, it's difficult to keep Shabbos. It's not easy to look for a job every week. And it's not easy not to have money to put food on the table. But you know what? Shabbos is so beautiful and so important that it's worth it. That's what they should have said. Not just fun. You know, sometimes I sit with my grandchildren and watch Uncle Moishe. You familiar with Uncle Moishe? He's a nice man. I know him personally. This is not a critique of most Uncle Moishe per se. But sometimes I don't like the message that the kids are getting. Uncle Moishe tells these kids, it is so much fun to be a mitzvah girl and a mitzvah boy. Right? Mitzvahs are fun. They dance around the room, what's it called, celebrating how fun it is to do mitzvahs. You can believe that till you're 3 years old. Because when you're three and you say, Mommy, I want an ice cream cone. And Mommy says, you just had a fleishig meal. You got to wait an hour, 6 hours before you can have your ice cream cone. Kid says, wait a second. Uncle Moishe said mitzvahs are fun. It is not fun to wait an hour for an ice cream cone. I've been fooled. And I'll tell you a secret. There are a lot of things in the Torah that are a lot less fun than waiting an hour for an ice cream cone. Torah is not fun, but Torah is worth it. That's the message. Again, you have to, little kids, okay. But as they get older, you have to let them know Torah is not easy, it's not fun, it's worth it. That's the message. Because when it becomes difficult, and you have to put in effort, and you have to put in investment, right, it's not fun. But not everything in this world that's worthwhile is fun. Many times the things that are most worthwhile involve a tremendous amount of effort and a tremendous amount of sacrifice and investment. I think that's what the Rabbanu Shlom taught us, the way the Torah was given. It says when the Torah was given, it was so overwhelming that they actually died. Their neshamas fled them, and they died. And God had to bring down the dew of Tchiyas HaMeisim to revive them, to resurrect them. Always bothered me. If God knew they're going to die, and he's going to have to bring them back to life, he didn't want to leave them dead, why did he let them die and have to bring them back to life? Why didn't he just give them the power not to die? Right? That's a lesser miracle. Instead of bringing back people from the dead, give them the power not to die. I think the Rabbanu Shlom wanted to teach us the following lesson. Torah demands many times sacrifice. Sometimes money, you have to buy esrog and lulav, it costs money, matzah. Sometimes time, you have to go visit somebody in the hospital, it takes up your time. You have to sacrifice time. And sometimes throughout the generations, Jews have been called upon to make the ultimate sacrifice and give up their life for Torah. But you know what? No matter what you sacrifice, even your life, Torah gives you back infinitely more. What is the material that is the dew of Tchiyas HaMeisim? Torah. It says, Torah Sashem Temima Meshivas Nefesh. Torah gives you eternal life. So God said, look, sometimes you're going to have to give up your life for Torah. But you know what? That same Torah you gave up your life for is going to give you eternal life. So what did you sacrifice? It's like a raffle where every raffle ticket is $10,000. But you can win $10 million. Now, you put in a tremendous amount of effort over 3 years doing odd jobs to earn $10,000 to buy the ticket. But it's an unusual raffle. There's only one ticket. If you buy the ticket, you trade it in for $10 million. Anybody can complain about the sacrifice of spending $10,000? It's so overshadowed by the benefit, right, that there's no sacrifice. That's what Torah is. Now let's go back to what we started with and related to the Mishnah too and to what we're celebrating on Shavuos. We said that according to Rabbi Yossi, the Torah was given on the seventh day of Sivan. Tosus asks a question that seems to contradict the Gemara. Because the Gemara says that when the world was created, God called the sixth day of creation Yom HaShishi, not Yom Shishi, like the other days, Yom Chamishi, Yom Revi. Why HaShishi, the sixth? To allude to the fact that the whole world was created on condition that if the Jews would receive the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan in the future, the world would continue to exist. And if not, it would go back to Tohu Vavohu. So he says, but according to Rabbi Yossi, the Torah wasn't given on the sixth day of Sivan. It was given on the seventh day of Sivan. How does Rabbi Yossi learn that pasuk, Yom HaShishi? How does it refer to the sixth day of Sivan? It should have been Yom HaShvi, referring to the seventh day of Sivan. Says Tosfos, even Rabbi Yossi agrees that the Torah was supposed to be given on the sixth day of Sivan. When the world was created, God had planned the Torah to be given on the sixth day of Sivan. The Gemara says, why wasn't it given then? Because Moshe saw the people weren't ready, and he asked God to add one more day and delay the giving of the Torah to the next day. So God delayed the giving of the Torah till the next day, and it was given on the seventh day of Sivan. But when the world was created, it was supposed to be given on the sixth day, even according to Rabbi Yossi. He answers the question. Think about it, what that means. Imagine if you have a wedding that you have scheduled for the sixth day of Adar. You hired the hall, the caterer, flowers, photographer, sent out 500 invitations. People know they're supposed to come the sixth day of Adar for this wedding. On the fifth day of Adar, the day before the wedding, an uncle calls from New York. The wedding's in Yerushalayim. An uncle calls from New York, and he says, I just missed my plane. There are no other planes today. I will not be able to make it to the wedding. Do you think you could push off the wedding for one day so I could make it? What would you tell the uncle? Are you out of your mind? The caterer, the flowers, the photographer, right, the hall. We sent out 500 people coming tomorrow. We can't push off the wedding for you. Send your present. We're sorry you won't be there and finished. Now, the God ordained the from the beginning of the world, the Torah should be given on the sixth day of Sivan. All the angels are ready. Everything's ready. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know the Jewish people aren't ready. Can we push it off a day? Why don't you push it off a day? It's like pushing the wedding off a day. This has been set from the beginning of creation. Why do you push off something like that? The answer is simple. Let's change the marshal. Everything's set for the sixth day of Adar for the wedding in Jerusalem. On the fifth day of Adar, the Kala calls from New York, and she says, I just missed my plane. I won't be able to make it tomorrow. Do you think you could push off the wedding for one day? What are you going to tell the Kala? Well, we have the caterer and the photographer and the everybody's going to be here. You're here, you're here, you're not here. We go on without you. We go without you. The whole wedding's for the sake of the Kala. You have to push it off. Doesn't make you can't go on without the Kala. That's what we learned on the sixth day of Sivan. We learned that we're the Kala. Because if we weren't, God couldn't have pushed it off one day. The whole Torah was for our sake. If the Torah is a liability, God says, look, I want you to do me a favor and get my Torah. And I'm giving you 49 days to prepare. And Moses sees they're not ready, tough luck. You're getting it whether you like it or not. But if the whole Torah is for our sake, it's a present. If we're not ready, then it's not a present. God pushes it off. You got to push it off for the Kala. So we didn't get the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan. We don't say, Zman Kabbalas Torah Seinu. What do we say? Zman Matan. That's the day we understood the Torah is a present. That's what we celebrate. Torah is a present. And that was not abrogated when the luchos were broken. Just the opposite. That lesson was strengthened when the luchos were broken. How so? If the Torah is a liability, okay, and God is putting this burden on us, and Moshe comes down from the mountain, and he sees the Jewish people are acting, behaving in a very not nice way. So what do you say? You're not getting this burden because you don't deserve it. No, you know what he should have said? You're not getting two luchos. You're getting four luchos. You're not getting 600 mitzvahs. You're getting 1,200 mitzvahs if it's a burden. It only makes sense to break the luchos if the Torah is a present. You're not getting the present. So that, what we learned on the sixth day of Sivan, that it was pushed off and we didn't get the Torah because we weren't ready, we learned that the Torah is a present And it's for our sake. That lesson was strengthened when Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos. Then we know the Torah is a present, and we're not getting the present if we don't act right. It's not a liability. Liability, you don't break the Luchos, you give us four of them. So that is what we do on Shavuos. It's not Zman Kabbalah Torah Seinu. That's Yom Kippur. We finally got the Torah. But it's Zman Matan Torah Seinu. It's the day that we understood the Torah is a present. Relating that to the Mishnah we learned, the Mishnah says that somebody who forgets something from his learning, right, so he's liable for his life. We said the Ramban says that this Pasuk, Raki Shomer Lechoshmo, is not a Pasuk that's telling me not to forget Torah, but to remember when the Torah was given, how it was given. Because we said then, if you learn Torah as it was given, with the awe and the fear, then you won't forget it. Right? Something that makes an impression on you, you don't forget. But now we'll alter that a little bit. What did we understand when we got the Torah? That it's a present. Something that's a present, you don't forget. Right? Something that's dear to you, that you know is really something that you benefit from, you don't forget. If somebody gives you a liability, asks you for a favor, you may forget it. But something that's a present for you, you don't forget that so fast. Therefore, if you remember Maimon Har Sinai, when it was clear to us that the way the Rabban Shem gave the Torah is, it's a present. It's not easy. It's not necessarily fun. But it's worth the investment and it's worth the effort because you're the one who ultimately gains. And no matter what you sacrifice for Torah, the Torah will give you back infinitely more than what you sacrificed. If you understand that, then you never forget something in Torah. It's so precious, right? It's such a benefit. Well, how could you forget it? So the two go together. If you remember Maimon Har Sinai, and the way we're explaining, Maimon Har Sinai was that you appreciated that the Torah is our benefit. It's our present. It's our opportunity, right? Then, when you learn Torah, you'll learn it, understanding that you're the one that was the beneficiary. It's giving you a tremendous merit. So how could you forget it? It's like somebody's counting diamonds. You don't forget them. You don't forget where you put them, right? If you think that you're doing something to do somebody a favor, right? Maybe you'll forget it. But if you know that it's diamonds that you're counting, right, you'll know exactly where they are. You won't forget where you put the diamonds. So could be if we connect these two things to the giving of the Torah, we can understand the Mishnah better too. A person who remembers Maimon Har Sinai, remembers what it represents, is not going to forget what he learned. And if you forget what you learned, that means you don't understand what the Torah is. That in itself is Mischayev Benafsho. If you don't understand what Torah is, you're not going to use it properly. And since Torah is our life, you're forfeiting your life. I think that's another possible idea. One last thing. There won't be a shiur next week because it's Yom Tov Sheni for a lot of people or whatever. And not for the people here, but for the center or whatever. They deal with a lot of chutznik people. So it's Yom Tov Sheni for them. But we'll just mention Shavuos doesn't have any mitzvahs involved with it. There's no shofar or matzah or sukkah. They're just minhagim. The Vilna Gaon points out Ashkenazi practice, not by Sfardim, by Ashkenazim. There are five minhagim that are pertain to Shavuos, and they spell the word acharis, a mnemonic. Aleph is Akdamus. Before we read the Torah, we say this poem, Akdamus, which speaks about the greatness of Torah. Then there's Ches, it's Cholov, we eat milk products. Resh is Rus, we read Megillas Rus. Yud is, Yerek, we decorate the house with greenery. And Tav is Tikkun, we stay up all night saying Tikkun L'Shavuos. That spells the word acharis. Torah is called Reishis. Torah is the beginning. But if you want to give Torah a good end and make it exist, those are the Minhagim. The Minhagim support the Torah. They enhance the Torah. They make it more personal. So by keeping the Minhagim, you enhance and protect the Torah. That's Minhag, therefore, is Hamogain, the same letters. It's a protection. It's a shield. Keeping Minhagim is a very important thing because they preserve the Torah. How important? It says that, what's it called, that Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, the Kovna Rav, they had a minig in Kovna that all of the chuppas were held in the courtyard of the shul. And once a wealthy man came to the Rav of Kovna, invited him to his daughter's chasana. He's a very wealthy man. He said, the chasana is going to be on my estate, not in the courtyard of the shul. So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan said, I wish you mazel tov, but I won't be able to be there. He said, why not? He said, because I don't go against customs. And the custom in this city is to have the chuppas in the courtyard of the shul, and I don't go against customs. So the man said, but that's ridiculous. So the whole reason for that custom is because people don't have a place to make a chuppah. I have a beautiful estate. It doesn't apply to me. So I'll tell you, you're right. It doesn't seem to make sense. But a custom's a custom. And when you start tampering with customs, there's a problem. The Medrash says that the customs of the Jewish people are like a pile of nuts. If you take one nut out, the whole pile falls down. If you start tampering with Minhagim, you're putting the whole Torah in danger. So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan said, it could have said that with any round thing. A pile of oranges, apples, you take one out, they all fall down. Why nuts? He said, because nuts, sometimes when you open a nut, there's nothing inside. But if you take that nut out, it also affects the whole pile. Sometimes Minhagim may not seem to be so important. They don't seem to have any important reason. But if you tamper with them, you're also, what's it called, going to destroy the whole thing. They say a story with the Chaim Brisker. He was learning with his Talmidim Friday night, and somebody came with a very important shaila that he must ask immediately. So Chaim stopped learning, and he said, what's the important question? He said, we have a minig that my wife bakes Lakshenkugel with raisins every Friday. And this week she forgot to put in the raisins. And I don't know what to do. Can we eat the kugel or not? Chaim said, I hear the question. Wait, hold on. Went to the bookcase, took out this book, took another book. Had a whole pile of books he was looking through. Finally he said, you can eat it this week, but make sure that she remembers to put in the raisins next week. The guy left. The Talmidim said, you know, Briskers, whatever, but where in the world in these books did you find the answer to this question? That was the most stupid question we ever heard. He said, if I would have told that man, go home and eat your kugel, right? This is a ridiculous question. Next week, his wife would be cooking soup, and some pig fat would have fallen into the vat. And she would have said, go ask the rabbi. He said, nah, last week it was crazy. This is even more stupid question. You don't make light of Minhagim. And I wanted that person to know that it was a very serious thing, and this way they'll respect other Minhagim. Right? Somebody once came to me, frantic, Erev Pesach, right before the Seder. She forgot to clean the screens in the room where they're having the Seder. Can they eat the Seder there? Now, if I would have told her, that's ridiculous. Do you eat the screens? Are you eating on the screens? What kind of chametz gets on the screens? Right? So next year, right, she would have had her oven, right? They just baked bread in it, and she would have said, well, if the screens are okay, the oven's okay too. You don't fool around with Minhagim. But on the other hand, there are Minhagim that are not good Minhagim. I once had a person drive to shul on Shabbos, park a block away. So during the week, I said to him, you know, there's no mitzvah to walk on Shabbos. The mitzvah, you're not allowed to drive. So parking a block away and walking the last block doesn't help. He said, no, Rabbi, you don't understand. My father parked there. My grandfather parked there. It's a minig, the minig in our family. Okay? That kind of minig has a different... He said, we said if you rearrange the letters of minig, it becomes hamogain. But if you rearrange them another way, it becomes gehenim. So some minhagim are gehenim, and some minhagim are the shield. You just have to know which minhagim are... but you don't... So therefore, if you want to preserve the Torah, the way to preserve it is through minhagim. So Shavuos is not mitzvahs. Shavuos is delegated to minhagim.